And on today's Windy City Queercast, Kelly and I bring you Thanksgiving greetings. Or is it Thanksgiving greetings? Or Thanksgiving greetings? I don't know. You'll understand. Also, it has been the most anticipated movie in the gay community in a long time. Probably not since Brokeback Mountain. I'm talking about Gus Van Sant's telling of the Harvey Milk story called Milk. And Kelly and I are heading to the movie theaters this weekend, and Richard Knight Jr. is going to tell us what we are in store for with the movie Milk. Sin's back. The bisexuals got much to be thankful for and much to talk about. And Kelly has a meeting with her idol, Sharon Gless. How did that go? And so much more. What scared the frack out of me during Thanksgiving as a child? Bet you don't know the answer to that one.
Windy City Queercast.
Gays and lesbians are all the rage.
We're here and we're queer.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
Windy City Queercast.
We're talking mega gay.
Ooh, I like that.
I'm Kelly Simpkins.
I'm Amy Matheny. This Queercast is brought to you in part by
Bud Light. Bud Light keeps it coming.
American Airlines, offering the GLBT community exciting vacation packages online at aa.com/rainbow.
And by Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit broadwayinchicago.com.
And you're listening to the Windy City Queercast, show number 265. I'm Amy Matheny.
I'm Kelly Simpkins.
And it's the Happy Thanksgiving show.
Gobble, gobble. Gobble, gobble. Brr.
And in our household, I get made fun of by how I say Thanksgiving. How do you say
it? You did it better that time. Thanksgiving.
Thanksgiving.
You're giving thanks.
No, you're thanks.
Giving.
Are you're giving thanks.
Thanksgiving. You're giving thanks.
You're giving thanks.
Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving.
It sounds weird.
That's how I say it.
You're a Southern oddball.
I'm a Southern oddball. It's been a while, it feels like, since you've been on the couch, but maybe not. Maybe we've just... And then, and yet...
I've been on
like,
the couch many times. We just haven't had this microphone shoved up our faces.
Oh, I was about to... You thought you were going to say up our... That goes... Bing! Dong, dong, dong!
That's the bell.
Alert, alert. Do not come closer. I don't know what that was. It was like Lost in Space. We've been talking about you because in our last show we had America's own Dame Sharon Gless. If she was, she would be a dame if we knighted.
She'd be a ballsy dame.
She'd be a ballsy dame. And the teaser is that Kelly has known for a little while that I was trying to help Kelly and Sharon connect so that Kelly could meet her idol. She is your American idol, I would think.
She is my New York cop, Christine Cagney and Lacey idol.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you got a big glossy headshot.
I feel like such a cheese ball, but I got a signed glossy. I got a signed For sure, Cagney and Lacey DVDs. And yeah. I got a photo taken.
You did. How was it? I mean, this you should preface by why and how you like Sharon Gless.
Why and how I like Sharon Gless. I have, I didn't catch the very first part of Cagney and Lacey because they went off the air, you know, and they were the first show in television history to go back on the air based on people writing in.
Right.
And begging them to get the show back on. So I was not in that first phase of Cagney and Lacey fans, but I was in the second phase of Cagney and Lacey fans. And I just grew up watching the show and seeing these two extremely well-written, intensely complicated New York female cops on Cagney and Lacey. And
you didn't know it was intensely well-written when you were a kid, though, did you? You just loved
well,
it.
I wasn't like six. I was, you know, in late grade school and all through high school.
Yeah.
And I did think, I mean, I think I knew then that they were dealing with issues that were off limits to most other one-hour television shows, one-hour dramas. They were dealing with alcoholism and rape and incest and AIDS, and they were dealing with a lot of political stuff, mm-hmm. Just a lot of social and cultural things, and, you know, having their characters go through.
Oh, you're making this sound so... You really were just hot for Christine Cagney. Come on.
But I loved the show. I thought the acting
was
superb.
I'm not saying that you didn't love the show, but you had a little bloop bloop for Christine Cagney. On the couch with Christine Cagney.
The most wicked crush on that blonde Christine Cagney cop. I loved Mary Beth Lacey. I loved Tyne Daly. I thought she was so funny and so well written and so wonderfully acted.
Christine.
Hoff, Junior. But I loved that cop. She was independent. She had, you know, men that she dated and men that she broke up with. She was intensely close to her father, who was a, you know, true sense of the word Irish New York cop. Loved his booze, loved his daughter, loved being out late and being a womanizer. And they had a really amazing, and I thought my father hung the moon, and I, you know, Christine was this tough talking, husky voiced, you know, drinking, could hang with the boys, could play poker and win, and, you know, acted like this, you know, silly little woman, and then took everyone's money. I mean, I'm making that seem very simplistic, but she was just this strong, gorgeous, tough talking broad.
Yeah.
That I grew up wanting to be like.
Yeah.
Wanted to be a New York cop and just thought she was gorgeous and had the little twings of, what's wrong? Something's different about me. Something's wrong here.
Yeah.
In Indiana. And I have continued to love that show.
Yeah.
Love it, love it, love it. Still think it holds up to this day. And I think they're both amazing. I mean, they swept the Emmys year after year after year.
Yeah.
Those two women. And she has just been... I've been a great fan of hers, and I'm smiling saying this.
I know your dimples are so deep right now.
I feel cheesy saying it.
But how was it? Like, you were meeting her, and you were really nervous. You were like, I'm not going to say anything. What am I going to say? And what was
your impression of her? You know I'm socially timid and awkward, and I know you have feelings about that, but I get really nervous, and I was really, really nervous, and I was trying to overcome that, and, you know,
we were standing... You almost flipped the ziti all over everybody.
I did flip. It wasn't the ziti. I think it was the chicken set. No, it was the ziti. No, yeah, it was the ziti.
Yeah.
Ziti! And she came out of the room, and, you know, it's that... I have been around people that are celebrities. Uh-huh. I've been around people that I have really admired, and I've had, you know, many, many privileged moments of having that kind of close contact with people that I really loved and seeing some of them fall from grace and kind of getting to know them and seeing some of them be perfectly, you know, raised up on my own little pedestal because they're so kind and gracious. And she was of the latter variety.
Yeah.
She walked out, you know, and it's just weird. It's like you see, especially when you love somebody when you're a child or when you're a young adult, it's something different than loving them as an adult, I think. There's something that happens that you watch them and you invest in these characters and in these lives. And, you know, I really had a lot of love for that character,
mm-hmm.
both, you know, illicit and otherwise.
Illicit and otherwise.
And she walked out and, you know, gave me a big hug. And she was just, you know, that kind of, that much, you know, she didn't look like the Cagney that I knew from the television series. Obviously, she's gotten older, and
She came out with her big T-shirt, big glasses. Sock feet.
The Chuck Taylors.
Oh, she had on her Chuck Taylors. That's right.
Made her ever more cool.
You told me like cool I wasn't evermore. There. I was there.
No, but I said after. Did you see the Chuck Taylors?
Yes.
And you kind of, I couldn't quite believe that I was standing there with this woman that I have watched on. I mean, I've told you this, but my sister and I, you know, we. I have VHSs to this day with Cagney and Lacey's on there. I have her Emmy win on one of those, you know, VHS things that no one even has a machine for anymore, so I can't watch them. But my sister and I used to watch them when we come home from college, just have like a Cagney and Lacey afternoon. And that woman just walks out, and Christine Cagney is standing right there. And it's, you know, I know that there's a separation, but that little kind of kid in me is like, oh, my God, that's Christine Cagney.
Yeah.
And it was amazing. Yeah. She was... could not have been more funny, more endearing, more gracious, more kind, more very much like, you know, she had some of the mannerisms that she had on that show. I got to see, obviously, the aspects of herself that she brought to that character and was just, you know, told great stories, really held a room, was very, very sweet to me in my, you know, frothy affection. And, which is awesome. Yeah. And I think she had a good time, too.
Yeah, I think so, too. Y'all were like the smokers, so y'all sat there.
We were the smokers. I got to smoke with Christine.
You got to smoke with Christine.
But no, it was a really, a very, very special night, and one that I will just hold very dear. And she just was very kind to me.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really nice when the people that we have loved from afar for a long time or admired actually end up being what we hope they're going to be.
Yeah, isn't that the thing? Like, that you get to meet somebody and they're kind and generous. And that's why I was so devastated I didn't get to meet Lucy Lawless. That was just sucked, you know? But that you got to meet Christine Cagney is pretty damn great.
Yeah.
And that I feel like, you know, I feel friendly with Sharon after all these years. And every time I get to see her... and I hadn't seen her in a really long time, that she seems like genuinely like, hi, and how are you? Like, what's been going on?
Yeah.
And how are you? And I think she's just got such a great spirit that way, which I think is a real openness. And I mean, she was taking care of us. She was like making sure we had everything we needed to sit and have dinner, because we were just having dinner in her apartment, you know, while she was here for to film Hannah Free. And I think it's going to be really cool. It's very funny to hear her talk about filming the lesbian sex scene and saying, yeah, I was really into it and I was just doing all this stuff and I didn't realize it.
Kissing the boobs and going down and going down to the nether regions.
And the director wasn't even in the room.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's not going to end up on the cutting room floor. I'm sure that will end up somewhere in the film. But God love her. She's just ballsy. I love that. I love that she was like, I was just going for it. So it'll be interesting. It's shocking that she's never played gay. Isn't it shocking that she's never played gay?
It is. And I thought she was gay. I hoped she was gay.
Yeah, she said that most assume that she's gay.
She has a gay vibe about her.
Yeah. But she's very married.
She's very married, very happily married to Barney Rosenzweig, who you kept calling Barry the whole night.
I call him Barry. I don't know why I called him Barry.
You mean Bonnie?
You mean Bonnie? Smoking. Yeah, I'm glad. I'm glad you had a good time, and I'm really glad that you were able to meet her and...
It was so
and have one
cool.
of those moments, because you don't get to have those moments very often, right?
No, I mean, and she's, you know, there's, I don't know, there's, yeah, you grew up watching, I mean, we all grew up watching movies and television, but there's something about somebody coming into your home.
Yeah.
You know, especially when you're on the younger side and still kind of figuring out who you are and what you, you know, the people that you like.
Oh,
and,
you mean like coming in your home as on television?
Yeah, coming into your home on television.
I thought you meant like
it's
coming in her home
than,
like we came into her home.
No. Like when someone comes into your home on TV, there is a certain... familiarity about them, unlike you conform with, you know, a movie star that you admire or really respect or love when you're younger.
Yeah.
There's just something about them that feels very kind of touchable in some way.
Yeah.
It feels like you know them in some way.
Yeah.
So I think it just strengthens the feeling of, you know, feeling really close to those characters, if that makes sense.
Have you met people that you've met and you're like, oh, I wish I hadn't met this person, it just ruined it for me?
There are a few, and I will not name names.
Oh, come
no,
on.
No, I just won't. I just will not.
Oh, come on.
I'll tell you privately.
No, tell me privately. I want to know publicly. Otherwise, it's not good dish. Just give me one. Really don't want to, do you?
I don't want to.
It's so scary. I'm trying to imagine, remember if there's anybody I've met. I've definitely had people that I've interviewed and I wasn't happy at the beginning and then they warm up. I've never had anybody from beginning to end who didn't warm up. But I've had people who it took a while to warm up, and I just wanted to be, really, you shouldn't, you can just come to this at the beginning better. But I have to say I've been pleasantly surprised by people over the years. Now, that's in interview situations. There have been performers who have come to perform at the festivals when we used, I used to help work with all the Market Days festivals, and we would book the stage back on Les by Gay Radio. We'd book the stage at Belmont and Halstead, and we would have tons of different artists, you know, and it's really interesting too, like artists who are very different on stage and privately. Like Margaret Cho is one of those people that on stage, she's really on, and off stage, she's really off. Like, she's very quiet. I would even say shy, quiet, and timid. And that's, I mean, just really not that persona that you see on stage. Not shy and timid in a bad way. I just mean she's much quieter and kind, and not that she's not kind on stage. But you know what I mean? Like, it's just very different.
Yeah, but I also think, even with the people that have disappointed me, because they haven't been who have I...
She didn't disappoint me.
I just want to clarify,
because I love Margaret. She's a lovely girl.
No, I understand. You're just saying, you know, her persona is so kind of loud and gregarious, and that privately she's pretty timid, and that's always like, oh, that's really interesting. But I'm saying the people for me that have disappointed me, because I've had, I think we have really high expectations of people that we either really love in a fan sort of way, mm-hmm. or really admire their work, and we want them to be everything for us that we have built up in our minds for them to be, and they're human beings.
Yeah.
And they have off days, and especially if you see them, if you're doing something with them and you see them on a consistent basis, you know, they have those human flawed moments where they're just people.
Yeah.
So that's also part of the pressure, I think. I think they have to be on. I mean, even as you were telling me about Sharon being here and never kind of, you know,
having a moment alone,
like, you know, it's a lot. I'm sure it's draining and exhausting and takes a lot of energy to feel like you need to kind of be on and be that kind of big, bold personality and be kind. I mean, it takes a lot of energy to continue doing that for people that, you know, are your fans when they meet you.
Yeah.
And it must be a hard job to not kind of let your guard down in that vein.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, very much. I mean, I think most of the people, many people like that I've never met, like that I would, the people that would bust my bubble are people I've never met that have the potential to. Which would be like, I don't think Lucy would bust my bubble if I ever got access to meet her. But like Meryl Streep, you know, if I ever got to meet Meryl Streep, that would be a big one for me.
Helen, and I hear she's fantastic.
I heard she's fantastic
and tons
too.
Tons of fun.
And Helen Mirren, if I ever get to meet Helen Mirren.
You wouldn't be disappointed by that.
If I just, you know, if I just got to squeeze her and just hug her once, it would probably set off
the big fires in California.
Yes. I don't know. There aren't too many more that have the capacity to probably burst my bubble, but
Dolly.
Yeah, Winona. I'd like to meet Winona.
You're Celine.
Celine.
Right.
So I don't think any of these people would disappoint. I usually think I pick people that, you know, but who knows? I could be wrong. Any of them could turn out to be, you know, whatever. I preface all this, you know, too, by saying that, you know, my closest friend, my best friend is Dai Lish, who is our editor. Hello, Di.
Hello, Dee.
Indiana. Happy Thanksgiving. So thankful for you in my life, and we should all be thankful for you in our podcasting life, because Di makes us all sound good. But she sent me an article out of the New Yorker, an article of Prince, and Prince is like Di's biggest. I mean, she is a huge Prince fan, and he said some very derogatory things towards the GLBT community and homosexuals, and she was devastated, you know, and sent me this article. And
because he's a born again, right?
I don't know what he is. I mean, I know he's religious something, but and I think it would, most people would go what you said, like he's a born again Christian and maybe he is, but I think he's,
not that that excuses it. At
yeah,
all,
I think there's something else. I think there's something else happen. That's going on there. But anyhow, so I just I don't wish that on anybody, to have somebody they really love and respect and, you know, deem genius and that they look up to.
To
and
not
then,
personally be what we want them, all that we want them to be.
Yeah.
It's a lot. It's just a lot to put on somebody.
It's a lot.
To have them fulfill our every need and desire and all of our expectations.
So one of the things that you and I are really looking forward to, and I think that, you know, we get to spend Thanksgiving together, and we get to spend Thanksgiving with a bunch of friends that we're going over to their house, which will be really great.
We're bringing the buns.
We're bringing the dinner rolls.
Rolling out the holly.
The dinner rolls. That's what we were told. Can you tell that we're lesbians that they do not trust to cook in the kitchen? Bring some dinner rolls.
That's not true.
Really?
I could have made my bean rosemary squash casserole.
Please don't.
That was delicious.
It was okay, honey. It was an exciting foray into casserole making.
That was more than a gourmet casserole.
It was like a
cranberries and garlic and leeks. I know. I loved it. It was a little intense and rich, but
it was a little intense. What do you call it? It was like a confit or something,
not a confit.
A cassoulet. That's what I meant.
Like a cassoulet. Yes.
Yeah. It's pretty rustic and hearty and
very rustic. Like a nice
made the whole household very gassy.
Wow. Are any fans disappointed?
But it made the dog gassy.
The dog didn't have any.
I know, but it was always the dog, you know? That was Nilla. But anyhow, but I
edit this, Di. Edit this.
But as we head into Thanksgiving, I am really...
Thanksgiving.
Whatever. We agree to disagree. I'm so excited about this new movie coming out, Milk, which we are going to see. And we're recording this right before Thanksgiving. You say it the correct way.
You actually said it pretty well.
All right. We recorded it before so that Di didn't have to work on the holiday. So we did it the day before. So we have not had our meal. We have not seen the movie yet, but we're going Thanksgiving night to see the movie.
Milk
with Sean Penn playing Harvey Milk. And
they should have like a campaign of Sean Penn as the character with a little milk mustache.
That would be cute.
Wouldn't that be funny?
Yes.
They've probably thought of
that,
though, right?
I think that the Got Milk people probably own that whole look and copyright, though. Wouldn't be a bad tie-in.
No, I'm saying the Milk campaign.
I'm with you.
All right. But, I'm so excited to go and see it.
And some people may know that Kelly and I, and this was a long time ago.
Some meaning one or two people.
Well, no, the people from the Queercast who listen know that I was in a production of Execution of Justice, and so was Kelly, and that was based on verbatim interviews that Emily Mann did.
Well,
mostly verbatim interviews.
Actually,
court transcripts
for the most part.
In a few interviews. About the assassination, and it was more focused a bit on Dan White, which will be played by Josh Brolin in the movie, and I hear he's fantastic. And it's just getting these amazing, amazing reviews, and so we won't talk about it too much here, but I think that with what's happening with Proposition 8 right now, what's happening with gays and lesbians getting married, and kind of the energy, the snap, if you will, that Stephen Rayner and I discussed that has happened within the GLBT community, that the snap, that this is a really perfect time for this movie to be coming out. This has been 30 years since the assassination. We just celebrated, or not celebrated, we just memorialized 30 years after Jonestown.
But celebrated their lives.
And celebrated their lives, but... you know, Harvey Milk was assassinated just a couple of weeks after Jonestown, because many people, when we were listening to interviews of people of Jonestown, said that they thought that George Moscone being assassinated were people from the People's Temple, and that this was fallout from, or at least that's what my character, the character I played and that you played at one point, Grace Stone, said, was that we just thought when Moscone was assassinated that that was on Jim Jones' list, that there were these certain public figures, and we thought it was the People's Temple. Mm. Really powerful time in San Francisco and Northern California politically. And it's
really
all coming around. And painful time, yeah. So it's 30 years.
Both of these anniversaries.
Yeah, within 2 weeks of each other.
That really... you know, I think the political community, but with People's Temple, for the African-American community that was wiped out there and mm-hmm. their family members, and for the gay, for the LGBT community with
Harvey Milk. Because he was the first openly gay city councilman.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think a lot of people, and maybe a lot of you listening, don't know really the story of Harvey Milk. And it's great that this generation is going to get to hear this story, because it's a really powerful, beautiful story. And I'm excited to see a bunch of amazing artists.
I mean, Gus Van Sant, you kind of can't go wrong there telling this story. And Sean Penn, I think, is just, you know, one of our finest American actors of this generation.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, I mean, they could not have planned it, and not that anyone would want to, would have wanted, obviously, for Proposition 8 to pass. But, you know, in hindsight, maybe we'll look back at this moment as the, you know, one of the defining moments in the LGBTQ community in terms of really rising up and having our voice about this discrimination and this, you know, not, what is the word? Not dis... being unequal, you know, yeah. Feeling like we
being
are not
disenfranchised,
free, disenfranchised, but not equal human beings under the law.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, what we've seen with the marches and the
protests.
And the protests that have happened as a result, I feel like there is an uprising, and this is such a kind of a key, one of those watershed kind of key moments in our community's history. That the significance of this film and the impact of this particular man and what he accomplished in San Francisco and how he was a unifier both politically and as a human being in that you know, early gay and lesbian and transgender community in San Francisco, it could not be a better time.
Yeah, it's...
I think it's going to be incredibly powerful.
Well, Richard Knight Jr. is telling us what he thinks of the film, and what I think is that we should all go out and see it this weekend to prove that queer movies and our stories sell out opening weekend, big number, box office. So everybody, the most political thing you can do, go see Milk in
Absolutely.
The next 5 days. And on top of that, tell your friends to go see Milk. And on top of that... Drink some milk. And on top of that, don't go to the Cinemark movie houses, because there's a boycott on those, and that's been in our news as well. So we're gonna tell you what, gosh, there's lots of different voices for this show. Kelly and I'll be back, but right now we're gonna tell you what's going on in the theater scene, because you and I are hitting some theater this weekend as well. You and I'll be going down to Chicago Shakespeare tonight to go see Midsummer Night's Dream, that's told in many different languages, everything from Sanskrit to French and American English and English. I think there's 12 different languages of telling this Midsummer Night's Dream down at the Chicago Shakespeare. And we just saw the farce, Don't Dress for Dinner, which got great reviews, and we can talk a little about that. And, you know, also in this show, Sin is back with her By the Way. But before Sin comes to you with By the Way, we're going to take you to...
Do you
to
always say it like that?
By the Way. We're going to tell you what is what's going on in the news. And then later on in the show, Richard Knight Jr. with his review of Milk.
Bud Light presents Real Men of Genius.
Real Men of Genius.
Today we salute you, Mr. Taxicab Over-Accessorizer.
Mr. Taxicab Over-Accessorizer.
Bobbleheads, tropical air freshener, an antique chandelier. You've got it all covered in tinsel and Mardi Gras beads.
I can't see the road.
When it comes to interior design, you don't trust anything that can't be plugged into a cigarette lighter.
Can I use your toaster?
No matter where they're going, your passengers always ask the same question. Is this a taxi cab or a Turkish bazaar?
How much for the candelabra?
So take a day off and crack open an ice-cold Bud Light night of the knick-knack. Because only you can proudly say, yes, I do have junk in my trunk.
Mr. Taxi Cab over accessorizer.
Bud Light beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
I'm Kirk Williamson.
I'm Amy Matheny.
And this is the Week in News.
San Francisco Mayor Gavin Newsom criticized President-elect Barack Obama and California Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger for not being more active in fighting Proposition 8. Newsom said that the other two politicians did not do enough to fight the measure, but added that they deserved credit for speaking out against the initiative when they did this past spring.
Police are looking into death threats that have been made against Vermont State Senator John Campbell after he said he would support a pro-same-sex marriage bill. an anonymous woman threatened Campbell and his family, saying that she would bomb his home.
In Syracuse, New York, Dwight DeLee, age 20, has been charged with second-degree murder regarding the killing of Moses Cannon, age 22, a man who lived his life as a woman. Police said that DeLee did not like Cannon's sexual preference.
National Log Cabin Republican President Patrick Salmon will leave at the end of January 2009, after slightly more than 2 years, to tackle new challenges. Salmon said, "I'll be doing documentary filmmaking, which is what I did before joining Log Cabin staff."
The Australian Sex Party, that country's newest political party, is pushing for the legalization of same-sex marriage. The party, which launched at an annual sex exhibition called Sexpo, is also pushing for a national sex education curriculum.
A new study has revealed that violence toward the GLBT community is a continuing problem in Amsterdam. The University of Amsterdam study revealed that 67 anti-GLBT attacks were reported in 2007, although police believe that most attacks are not reported. One of the study's authors said that some attackers do so because they feel that they're being targeted for subduction.
Jack McEnroth, who competed on the reality TV show Project Runway, recently revealed his HIV/AIDS education campaign at the Gay Men's Health Crisis Fashion Forward benefit in New York City. McEnroth, who has been HIV positive for almost 2 decades, has called the program Living Positive by Design.
Make the Yuletide Gay, a gay-themed Christmas comedy feature film, will start principal photography Wednesday, December 3rd. The movie, scheduled for release during the 09 holiday season, will star Keith Jordan and out Canadian actor Adamo Ruggiero.
The Trevor Project, which runs the only nationwide 24-hour crisis and suicide prevention helpline for GLBTQ youth, will honor Oscar-nominated actress Sigourney Weaver December 7th in L.A. Actress Anne Hathaway will present Weaver with the Trevor Life Award, which honors individuals who inspire GLBTQ youth. Weaver has been in movies such as Infamous, Jeffrey, and the upcoming Lifetime film Prayers for Bobby, in which she plays a conservative woman who questions her homophobia after her gay son's suicide.
On November 15th, Keep a Child Alive co-founder and global ambassador Alicia Keys took part in welcoming 400 student AIDS activists in the second annual KCA Student AIDS Summit. During the event, the Grammy-winning singer-songwriter served as keynote speaker and also participated in The Stigma Factor, a panel discussion on AIDS. And that's the weekend news brought to you by Windy City Times.
Hey, it's Finn bringing you By the Way, where I attempt to represent the B in the big gay alphabet. This time I'm going to talk about how the straight community reacts to bisexuals. I'm sure you've heard it all before, and I'm not looking for someone to play me a violin. I just want to point it out because it's different than how they perceive the rest of the community. So first is the straight girls, who often assume that we say we're bi to get more attention from the guys. I have a lesbian friend who identified as bi before she realized she was lesbian, who said that she was treated worse when she identified as a bi. And then I've heard the same from guys, too, that when they find out a woman's bisexual, they think that she's just telling them that to get him to think about sex, or that being bi makes her a slut or easy. It's interesting, too, because that is not the kind of attention I'm looking for. Quite the opposite, really. It's gross to me when dudes find out you're bi and get all excited because he's thinking, oh, great, more for me. Like, just because I'm bi, we can be in an open relationship, or he can watch me get it on with other women. I'm bi because that's the way I am, not for some guy's pleasure. And while I'm in a relationship, I want to be monogamous, so being bi is still part of who I am, but if I'm in a straight relationship, that's that. I'm just sleeping with whoever my partner at the time is. No judgment for the bi ladies who are looking for open relationships, but doesn't that make them polyamorous then? And if this is the kind of response that bis get from the straight community, then when and why should we even tell people we're bi? Those sound like entirely different segments, so be sure to tune in as I explore these topics and more. Thanks for listening. I'm Finn with By the Way, where I try to represent the B in the big gay alphabet.
Mm-hmm. Hello, you interactive theatrical types. This is Dick O'Day inviting you to celebrate the holidays this year with two wacky shows for the price of one. Join me at 3 p.m. on Sunday afternoons at the Royal George Theater from November 16th through December 21st for a mini holiday-themed version of my Dick O'Day's Big Lovely Bingo theatrical game show. After bingo, stick around for Sunday School Cinema, the hilarious hit comedy in which Sister reviews movies from her nonsensical perspective and lets you know which ones are good, bad, and condemned. That's Sundays at 3 p.m. at the Royal George Theater at 1641 North Halsted from November 16th through December 21st. Phone 312-988-9000 or visit dickoday.com or nunsforfun.com. And that's a four with like the number four. Okay, you got it. Richard Knight Jr. with another Night at the Movies Mega Minute. It's been a long 3 years since Brokeback Mountain, the last gay-themed movie to win both critical accolades and breakthrough to mainstream audiences. Now, at last, with Milk starring Sean Penn as the slain gay rights activist, we have another contender for widespread acceptance from all quarters. The movie has been helmed by openly gay director Gus Van Sant, working from an original script by gay screenwriter Dustin Lance Black. Together, they've created a straightforward biopic of slain gay rights activist Harvey Milk that is both a compelling story of an ordinary man whose activism turned him into an extraordinary icon and a fascinating moment in our gay history. It's a wonderful, full-bodied movie that earns its tears honestly, driven by an Oscar-worthy performance by Penn. The story follows Penn as the middle-aged New Yorker Harvey Milk, who moves to San Francisco in 1971 with his lover Scott Smith, played by cutie pie James Franco. Harvey becomes a gay rights activist and city politician. Then in 1977, he becomes the first openly gay man to be elected to public office in the USA. The following year, both he and the city's mayor, George Moscone, played by Victor Garber, were shot to death by their former city supervisor, Dan White, played by Josh Brolin. We know within the first 5 minutes that Milk has been assassinated, and it seems that we're in for a very dark road. And based on Van Sant's previous efforts, that's a fair supposition. But Milk was naturally a brilliant man, an optimist with a goofy grin, able to turn the bleakest losses into a personal victory. And Penn captures all these things and much more in his endearing performance, lifting the spirit of the film. Van Sant gives us plenty of intimacy along with the historic highlights of Milk's life, tragically cut short, and the film ends with a recreation of the Kennelet March held in honor of Milk and Moscone. But by that point, I'd also written on my pad, how can I possibly be objective about a movie that is so close to my heart? And I realized that there are movies that touch us so personally that we become awash in them. Milk is one of those for me. I think it's an unadorned masterpiece, and I want you to go in droves to see it, and then take to the streets to overturn Proposition 8 and every other asinine attempt to discriminate against our people, and I want you especially to take to heart Harvey Milk's battle cry, never blend in. I'm Richard Knight Jr., and that's your Night at the Movies Mega Minute.
Hello, this is Mary Testa.
And Jackie Hoffman.
From the Broadway musical smash Xanadu. And we have something very important we need to talk to you about.
Happiness.
Speak the truth, Sister Jackie.
Are you content with your life? Are you frustrated? Do you come home at the end of the day and go, what the hell was that about?
If so, and we think you might, then you could use a laugh.
A good one, or two.
Or a bazillion, and we know just where you can get them.
At Xanadu.
Please, people, it's the biggest surprise hit in Broadway history, with an adorable love story, fabulous songs, inspired hilarity, all wrapped up in a sweet 90 minutes.
I love that part. You're home in time for Top Chef.
Oh, and if you think we're that crappy 80s movie, think again.
Please, the critics are gaga for this thing. The New Yorker actually called us ridiculously brilliant. I do not lie.
So it's not like we're therapists or anything, but if you want to get happy, you could take pills, or you could come and see Xanadu.
For tickets to Xanadu, visit BroadwayInChicago.com.
Culture Club. Culture Club. Culture Club. Theater.
Music.
Dance.
Art.
Performance.
Provocative.
Hilarious.
Exciting.
Queer.
Innovative.
Campy.
Edgy.
Original.
Get some culture in your life.
Join the club.
For the week of November 24th, 2008, you are in Chicago's Culture Club. Meet Edith and Little Edie Beale, Jackie O's most scandalous relatives in the Tony Award-winning smash hit musical, Grey Gardens, starring Hollis Resnick. This fall's most anticipated production follows the pair's fall from high society into the squalor of their infamous East Hampton home. Grey Gardens is playing through December 28th. For more, visit northlight.org.
Signal Ensemble Theater continues its sixth season with Six Degrees of Separation, running now until December 20th at Wicker Park's Chopin Theater. A comic tragedy, Six Degrees of Separation, follows a young homeless man creating a web of confusion and tragedy as he enters a family's life, exploring that everybody on this planet is separated by only six other people. Visit SignalEnsemble.com for more.
Don't miss the hilarious comedy, Don't Dress for Dinner, starring Burn Notice star Jeffrey Donovan and Patricia Callumber, formerly of TV's Sisters, playing now at the Royal George Theater. For tickets to Don't Dress for Dinner, go online at don'tdressfordinner.com.
Remy Bumpo Theater presents The Marriage of Figaro, playing through January 4th at the Greenhouse Theater Center. Five stars, says Time Out Chicago, a top-to-bottom delight whose message is nestled in an abundance of screwball craft. Don't miss The Marriage of Figaro and a new adaptation. For more information, visit remybumpo.org.
For more Culture Club, visit WindyCityTimes.com.
So, Kelly, as we head into big Thanksgiving meal, what are your fondest memories of Thanksgiving growing up? And what's your favorite thing that you look forward to eating around Thanksgiving? Are you a big turkey stuffing person?
You know, I didn't eat meat for so long that it's kind of recently come back into my life. So that's always an odd one. I was always a big cranberries.
Yeah?
Green bean casserole, mashed potatoes.
Wait, green bean casserole with like the French onions on
Oh, yeah,
top?
That was a staple for us. Yep. Sweet potatoes,
you
pumpkin
love sweet
pie.
Potatoes. Yep. There's nothing about Thanksgiving I don't like to eat. I love the stuffing with the turkey, with the gravy. So delicious.
Stuffing is very particular, though. I think you have to have the right stuffing.
I've never had the wrong stuffing.
A lot of people make very kind of gourmet, very mushy kind of breaded stuffing.
I've just
it has
always
to be
had
very crispy and very precise for me.
Yeah, I'm just worried about making sure we get the dinner rolls right. That's what we're supposed to bring. So I got to get them salty and soft. Little soft, salty dinner rolls. We got to find them. My mother said that they don't have our kind that we normally eat in Tennessee up here, probably.
Probably not. And so, memories have always just been one of my fondest. Growing up, being with my family, being with, you know, going to my mother's mother's, and then going to my dad's mom's and just being around all my extended aunts and uncles and cousins and having a sense of family, all the smells and people, you know, people for once that I can remember on these two holidays, both Thanksgiving and Christmas, really talking, not necessarily from any prayerful place, but talking about gratitude. You know, that was not a word that I heard a lot of in my household, and how privileged we all are and the things that we can really be thankful for. And that to me is the spirit of this week, just really, you know, kind of honing down into your peaceful places of privilege comparatively with what the rest of the world is going through, and that we have an abundance and a lot of things to be grateful for. And then I did work at a homeless shelter one Thanksgiving when I probably the sixth or seventh year that I moved to New York. Mm-hmm. And I was alone the entire day. Mm-hmm. I went down in the morning. I worked all day. Then I came home and like, but that was a real first time I had done that kind of service work during Thanksgiving and really made it about other people. And that was really special.
Yeah.
And just served a lot of homeless people and people who were on the street, families and kids and, you know, what a wonderful thing to be of service in that way to other people who are really struggling.
Well, I think you have to, like, reach out on Thanksgiving. I mean, we're kind of at an adopted Thanksgiving meal ourselves tomorrow. And, you know, it's interesting because I equate Thanksgiving with Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. I always remember that it was going to be – it was on CBS. Do you remember when CBS had that – it was like CBS and it was like this logo and it would go do-loo-loo-loo-loo-loo-loo-loo-loo, you know, and it was this high-pitched sound and then it would start with Willy Wonka. And Willy Wonka scared the fuck out of me. Like, I just knew I was going to be Veruca Salt. I knew I was a spoiled brat. I thought I was going to eat the wrong piece of candy and I was going to blow up – like a, no, not Veruca Salt, the blueberry girl. The very first
Violet one. Violet Beauregard.
Violet Beauregard. It was like, if you spot it, you got it. Like, I thought if I saw her, then I just identified
with her. That fear is
her.
Still possible.
It is. I thought I would, like, chew that piece of gum and it would turn me blue and they would have to roll me out of...
And what have you learned?
Thomas Avenue in Cleveland, Tennessee.
What have you learned?
I've learned that it is probably true, and I have to work really hard to not chew that piece of bubble gum.
No, what was your fear? What are her characteristics?
I don't know. She was spoiled
rotten.
You said rotten.
She was a spoiled...
She was spoiled rotten, and I didn't think I was spoiled rotten. I just thought I was spoiled. But I have to tell you, that show just scared the fuck out of me. The Oompa Loompa scared me. I never got how
really
it was
a
part of
a kid
thing, and it used to make me just feel nauseous after eating food, so much food, to go in and watch...
It was around Thanksgiving.
Always Thanksgiving.
And I have not remembered that, but that show used to terrify me.
But you know what I always loved were there were always kind of these holiday shows. Besides like the Macy's Day Parade, which I used to wake up.
Charlie Brown.
But that never happened on Thanksgiving.
The Great Pumpkin.
It always happened the week before. It's probably aired earlier this week. I'm sure Lori would know that. My friend Lori who listens. But what I remember is all these great kind of Thanksgiving special variety shows. And, you know, far be it. There are the lesbians that are putting on the big variety shows this week around Thanksgiving. We've got Ellen DeGeneres having her really big, I don't know what it's called, like the really big show. I don't know what it is. It's something like that. Ellen's really big show. And so she's going to have a Thanksgiving special. And then you have Rosie O'Donnell launching for the first time her Rosie Live variety show, which I really think is quite funny that the lesbians are
They're keeping entertainment alive.
They are.
Who are Rosie's first guests? Do you know?
I did, but I...
Sharon Gless was going to be one of them, but she couldn't.
I know. She did tell us that, didn't she? She's going to go watch it being taped.
In the Inn.
I think it's on Friday. But so check your local listings or put in your TiVo, Rosie Live. But I'm really excited to see Rosie be back on television in a variety show way. I loved how much she supported musical theater and Broadway when she had her own show. And I think this is right up her alley. And I always loved Rosie best in her spotlight, VH1 spotlight kind of moments.
Spotlight.
And I think she's going to be really good at this. And I hope it's a big, big hit. And Ellen's always fun. So
is it going to be an every Sunday kind of thing?
I don't know. I think it is. I think it's a regular series for Rosie, a weekly show. And it's live. They're always going to be live.
What was the last variety show that we've had on television?
Gosh, I don't know. My favorite was Donnie and Marie. So that goes way, way, way back. And Dolly had a show, and Dolly's was really good. For me, it's like something of the 1970s, like the late 1970s, where the Donnie and Marie show and the
Sonny
Dolly
and
show. The Sonny and Cher show.
Carol Burnett.
That was my favorite.
The great one. Mm-hmm. You just said your favorite was the other one.
No, Carol Burnett was my favorite. See? I have lots of favorites. I have lots of gratitude on Thanksgiving.
For variety shows?
For a variety of variety shows. That's what I have. Well, you know...
What are you grateful for?
What am I grateful for? Health. People in my life. Good friends. A job. A lot of people don't have a job right now. I love that I get to do this, which I enjoy doing and is always interesting and new and different.
Money's really good on the podcast.
Huge bags because of the gazillions of listeners. That's why. I'm grateful for you. I'm grateful for the dog who brings me unconditional love and happiness and is sleeping here at our feet as we record. You know, just good friends and health and my family, and their health and a lot of abundance, even though I think it's a really scary time right now around the world and definitely in our country. And yet there's a lot of hope. And it's some of what we were saying about the protest episode about Proposition 8 when we had the march. You know, we've lost some battles, but we're going to win the war. And I feel that. I feel that's kind of what's going on with the economy right now. That's what's going on with the country. We're down to less than 55 days to the Obama being sworn in. And I just feel like that is going to be such a moment in our history. And
first time it's ever happened. Can't not be a moment. It's
well, it is, but moment. It is. I mean, it's going to be a big moment for that. But I just think something is going to shift into place with that, metaphorically, realistically. And I just feel that there are great things ahead for those people in my life and for myself and for our country and for the world. Well, a lot of advancements. And I know I have a lot of friends right now and people that I care about that are going through really difficult times. And it feels really hard and really scary. And I think that there is something necessary in that for us when we're going through those moments to we grow and we get to the other side of those. And you know, just because it's not the way we would have gotten to the other side, maybe we'd all choose for it not to be painful or hard. Or I just know a lot of people are struggling, especially economically right now, and mm-hmm. I'm really mindful of that. And and maybe many of you listening have lost your jobs or are worried about losing your jobs or savings or friends or family, you know, who are really struggling. And I think there are a lot of unknowns right now. But, you know, I think even sometimes when it feels the hardest, just to remember those things that we're grateful for. And Thanksgiving's a good reminder of that. So be amongst people. I think that's the biggest thing that I would say on Thanksgiving is don't spend it alone. Go and be out and in the world in whatever way that can be. You know, call other people and connect and let people know that you're thankful for them in your life. And so I guess that's what I'm thankful for. Why are you smiling?
I'm just smiling.
You're just smiling? All right, folks. Well, that was our little restful and full and thankful podcast. Happy Thanksgiving to all of you. Thank you for listening, and thank you for any of your comments and feedback. We really appreciate that as we head into the end of the year here, trying to get all of the various co-hosts on. Coleman Domingo on next week, and Deb Pierce. Alexander Billings is going to be on with us the week of Christmas. There's just a lot of good stuff, you know, coming up on the horizon as we head into 2009. After Thanksgiving, it feels like we are just barreling into 2009 and a whole new year. So, Kelly, happy Thanksgiving.
Likewise.
And let's not watch Willy Wonka.
Okay.
All right. And everybody, go see Milk. Milk it up. You know from Richard Knight Jr. that you should now, and even if we didn't have a review on here, you still should. Go see Milk. That's what we're going to do. And we'll let you know what we think.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to another Windy City Queercast. This program is brought to you in part by Bud Light. Bud Light keeps it coming. Broadway in Chicago. For the hottest tickets in town, visit BroadwayInChicago.com. And American Airlines, offering exciting GLBT vacations online at aa.com/rainbow. Special thanks to our Queercast family, Kirk Williamson, newscaster, and Di Sturkey, production editor. I'm Amy Matheny, your host. Please comment on our shows at WindyCityQueercast.com and iTunes. The next Queercast is only days away, so don't miss it. Subscribe today. Windy City Queercast, queer and now.